Twisted Roots by A.G. Parker. Read by A.G. Parker. Chapter 12. Because no retreat from the world can mask what is in your face. Gregory Maguire, Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West. The rain continued to tap her melodies onto the lighthouse, swelling the belly of the land below. Elliot, weary, accepted Lorna's offer to stay for a few days. Necessity, however, meant that he spent the first morning hunched over the phone, making funeral arrangements for Jacob's father. He'd tried to finish his task before the rest of the household were awake, but had forgotten that business hours seldom coincide with the stealth of early morning. He sighed and abandoned his work, heating water on the stove, stooping as he did so to look out of the kitchen's narrow window. Dawn had come, and the red sun burned away the rain, yet a few scattered clouds still clung to the sky. The light seemed to set them afire. Through their blaze, gulls swept and glided and dove. He was still half watching, lost in thought, as the kettle's sigh became an urgent whistle. Elliot slid on his boots and took his mug of coffee out into the light and watched as its steam rose and lost itself in the dawn breeze. "Morning," called Lorna. The cat bounded back to her and wove through her booted feet, catching the folds of her open cardigan on his tail. Her face was ruddy, glowing with exertion. She cradled open baskets, their handles resting heavily and awkwardly on her forearms. "Figs," she said, presenting Elliot with the sight of the fresh, ripe fruits in such abundance that they were almost spilling from the baskets. "Help me get these inside." "Sure." They strode their muddy boots into the alcove of the front porch and left them there to bask in the sun until the mud dried and flaked. They set the baskets down on the kitchen counter, and Elliot somehow found himself washing fig after fig as he and Lorna talked. "Thanks for giving me a hand," her voice dropped. "How are you doing, Elliot? Really?" The kitchen was quiet, apart from the gentle stream of running water and the soft, barely there sounds of the ocean outside. "We're managing. Recent events, it's hard. What Layla and I have, it's wonderful. I don't know many parents who end up with such a relationship with their kids. Certainly not Jacob's folks." "I don't need to tell you, he's lucky to have you. They both are." She carefully smoothed her thumb over the fabric of the tea towel. "Layla's a miracle, Elliot. And she's grown that way because of you. And what you're both doing for Jacob, it's lovely. I'm sure his mother would appreciate it when she's in a better state." Elliot stepped back from the sink and ran his hands through his hair. The sounds of movement way above them indicated that Layla and Jacob were awake and would soon be descending upon the quiet of the kitchen. He pressed the base of his skull into his palms and sighed. "I have one more call to make. They weren't open before. The kids... Jacob shouldn't hear this." "I'll take them out," she said. "They can come with me for the morning, give you some time to make arrangements." He nodded, and the muscles of his mouth returned it to the grim line that had become its norm in recent days. Lorna caught his hand in hers and pressed figs into his palm. "Eat." He nodded again. "Elliot," she said, eyes serious and fixed. "I'm sorry I left you both. I'm going to try to be there for you from now on. I'm glad you called." Elliot's smile filled with warmth. "Me too, Lor. It's been good seeing you and having someone I can rely on." Layla and Jacob had enjoyed the morning's clear view from the lantern room. The ocean stretched beyond the horizon to where the sun turned the water into liquid fire, matching the blood-orange sky. They had watched birds soar and rise on thurbles and catch leaping fish in their hungry beaks. The cliff edge beneath them curled around to the west with jagged teeth and steely greys. To the left, the hungry waves ate into the rocks and, following the circle of the lantern room around, at the final point of the compass lay the garden, and then the hinterlands, disappearing into distant greens punctuated with bright yellow gorse. Layla tried to goad Jacob into wanting to explore, but to no avail, so they traipsed downstairs to the kitchen. "Hey, love," called Elliot. "Jake, sleep well?" He noticed the pools of greys and purples had subsided a little under Jacob's eyes, but he still carried a weariness in his face and limbs that would take more than one night's sleep to heal. Lorna was rinsing figs in the kitchen, putting the clean ones onto a linen cloth on the counter to dry. The wind had spun her hair so that it looked like a swirl of gunmetal waves laced through rays of sun that bobbed as she busied herself. "Fancy a walk on the beach, you two?" she called over her shoulder. Layla glanced at her father, who stayed, elbows resting on the breakfast table, hands occasionally fluttering across his mouth. He looked like a wavering eye in the midst of a morning storm. "You ready, Dad?" she asked, noting his bootless feet. "Mm," he grunted, then reworked his face into a smile. "I have a few bits and bobs to do here first. I might catch up with you later. You three have fun." "Get your coats then," Lorna's voice carried from the hallway. "You'll be blown about. Summer's not quite as forgiving in this wind." They gathered their things and followed Lorna out of the house and into the bright, breeze-blown morning. Without the shelter of the house, the wind was strong. It blew and buffeted them around, exposed as they were on the cliff top. They followed the track east until it dipped and suddenly disappeared, and Jacob elbowed Layla and muttered, "How the fuck is your aunt going to make it down there?" Layla, shocked by Jacob having spoken, opened her mouth to respond, but before she could, Lorna had gracefully climbed down the track and vanished from sight. At first, there were a cautious few steps from Jacob and Layla as they followed before Lorna re-emerged again, leading them around grassy tips and down the steep descent. The zigzagging path was no more than a foot wide and riddled with small rocks. For another half an hour, they scampered and wove and jumped down the cliff path, taking care when they stumbled on loose rocks not to follow them as they tumbled over the edge. Lorna never put a foot wrong. At last, the solid path beneath their shoes gave way to fine, buttermilk-coloured sand. Here, the waters did not crash, but instead lapped gently, leaving frothy kisses on the paleness of the beach. Lorna bent down and removed her shoes. Layla and Jacob did the same, and soon they were all walking along the hard, wet sand, enjoying its roughness on the soles of their feet, skipping backwards whenever a wave brought its icy fingers too high, and dodging the scattering crabs left beached by the tide. They walked from the water's dark line and sat on a large, flat rock, smoothed over the years by the ocean. Lorna splayed out cheese scones and fresh figs, and soon there was the approving silence of hunger being satisfied. Gulls with yellow eyes watched with unreserved keenness for crumbs that could be scavenged later, the bolder ones making hopeful and aggressive swoops. As the meal tapered off, the picnickers idly contemplated the grey ocean and her white-crested waves. Occasionally, a fish would break the surface, to which the ever-hungry birds would flock in squawking mass. After the food was gone, Jacob began to fidget. He went off to investigate the bounty of rock pools that lay farther along the shore. Layla leant her back along the smooth rock and allowed her eyes to gently close. Suddenly, she felt a sharp pinch on the burnt skin of her hand. She tried to pull her sleeve down to cover it, but too late. "It seems we need to discuss a few things," Lorna said. With deliberate care, she examined Layla's hand and removed a small glass bottle from inside her coat, its contents disguised under a blue veneer. She pulled a cork stopper from the top with her teeth, and Layla tried to jerk away as her aunt splattered droplets of liquid on the burn. It smarted. "Wait!" The pain was almost unbearable, a searing wave cresting over the steady agony she'd had since reaching into the hearth fire. But as Layla looked, the skin knitted together, the red blisters smoothed and paled until no trace of the burn was left. She scrambled back, but Lorna's grip held her. How is that even possible?" "Healing herbs," Lorna said, with a grin that didn't quite reach her eyes. "It's like nothing ever happened." Then her grip tightened. "It must have been awful for you, Layla, all those tragedies, and finding out about your mother's death like that. I would have liked to have been able to tell you myself." She looked Layla in the eye, but there was something shifting, artificial beneath her gaze. "I bet a part of you wishes you'd never remembered." Layla watched Jacob throwing pebbles into the waves and wished that he were close enough for her to shout to. Lorna leaned in close until Layla could smell the wood smoke on her hair. "That's all your mother wanted for you, a normal life. And you were happy, weren't you?" She studied Layla's face intently. "I think so." Layla's wrist was released and she rubbed it, edging away from her aunt. "But now, Now I have to figure out how to stop the witch. Only no one will really tell me what I need to do. Lorna nodded. Elder lore states that a witch must grow by discovering things for herself. Help must be minimal. I'm sure it's frustrating, given the circumstances. Jacob's dad died. Layla's voice was hardly a whisper above the sea-rolled pebbles. And Sam. She felt anger flare. If they know everything, if they're so powerful, why couldn't they have intervened? Why didn't they do something? Lorna gave a bitter laugh. It doesn't work that way. A portion of us are reborn to protect the world. The rest aren't here in this realm anymore. For them, it takes a great amount of magic to sustain a presence here. She eyed Layla. You'll have met one of them. She appears when it's a witch's time to begin a journey or take over a territory. Layla nodded, the pieces falling into place. The stranger. Hand in pocket, Lorna played with the stopper of a second vial. The hidden vial. The one she would have no choice but to use. She granted me responsibility for the coastline and its inland moors. Your mother was given the village where you live. We each have our appointed land over which we have power. Indeed, the only place we have power. The moment was close. No Elliot, and Jacob wasn't near enough to stop her. We're the descendants of a sacred line. Our task is to observe and to protect, where necessary, the balance. We use our knowledge of the world's hidden mechanisms and pass down wisdom to the newborns, to ourselves. When we die, our spirit returns to the earth and we are reborn so that we may continue to perform our duties. And at the end of our earthly service, we are released from these bindings and returned to the source of all things. And sweet, sweet ignorance. My dreams, said Layla. I've seen myself in the village sometimes with others I think, or I feel I know, but it's before roads and the village of this time and we're walking across the snow. Some of us may get glimpses back into our past lives. Your dreams are harmless enough. They tend to pass once you have become aware of them, of who you are. Perhaps, though, they have served their purpose. She began to twist the stopper from the glass. If she got her here now, it could be so quick. It could be over in moments. And what about my mum? Is she dead? Or a ghost? Lorna's chest turned to ice. Inside her pocket, her hand went still. Your mother. She's barely said anything, but wait, I nearly forgot. Layla fumbled in her coat for the folded paper she'd got from the ancient hearth. Gulls circled overhead, their intermittent cries piercing the low murmur of the sea. The hearth tender said to give this to you. Yours is the house on the hill. That you'd help? Lorna gathered herself. The contents of the second vial were ready to spill out, to do what needed to be done, but later, she thought. She could always do it later. She pressed the stopper firmly into the neck of the glass with her thumb, and then reached out to take the parchment from her niece's hand. End of chapter 12. Twisted Roots was published by Wild Wolf Publishing and is available on Kindle via Amazon or as a downloadable PDF via my website. The links for both of these are in the description of this podcast. You can follow me on social media at @twisted_roots_agparker or @a_g_parker on Instagram. Please head to my website for other details and to keep updated with my poetry, performances, fiction, articles, and more. I hope you enjoyed listening to this latest chapter of Twisted Roots and that you tune in next time.